Welcome to the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast, your resource for building the photography business of your dreams. This is Shamira Young, bringing you tips, business strategies, and interviews with award-winning photographers. We're all in this together. Let's get to the good stuff. Hey everybody, I'm here with experienced celebrity photographer and film director Jeff Vespa. He's also a superstar user of Photo Shelter, which helps photographers deliver, store, sell, and share their work, all from one easy-to-use platform. Today's show is sponsored by Photo Shelter, and I highly, highly encourage you to check them out at photoshelter.com or head to our show notes page and get a 14-day free trial plus 20% off a standard or pro account for the year. I say all this not just because Photo Shelter is our sponsor, but also because they are truly passionate about helping photographers run the business of their dreams. And Jeff is a perfect example of that. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, it's so funny because as we were talking in the pre-interview chat, I wanted to do some name dropping with your portfolio because with you being a celebrity photographer, I mean, some serious name dropping can happen here. And I had trouble just picking a few examples. I mean, I'm looking at your portfolio right now, Jeff, and you've shot Robert De Niro, Kevin Costner, Tom Hanks. I'm seeing Harry Potter. I can't remember his real name.
It's Daniel Radcliffe.
Thank you. Oh, and then look, there's Robert Downey Jr. I mean, this is just the coolest thing ever. I am so excited to hear about you and your journey because I've said it before on the show, and I'll say it again, we all start somewhere, which is why I named this podcast The Pro Photographer Journey, because it's important that we highlight each other's journeys in order to inspire other photographers who are listening. And so with that, thanks for being here, and could you give us your background? How did you get started and end up doing what you're doing?
I mean, I always wanted to be, you know, make movies. I mean, that's something I always wanted to do from when I was, you know, very young. And I was actually in the movie Hairspray in 1986 back in Baltimore, Maryland.
No kidding.
Yeah, I have a small role in the original movie Hairspray, the John Waters directed one. And when I went to school, I started in New York. I started working at MTV like back in 1988. So I worked actually with Ben Stiller back then. I worked on the TV show Remote Control. So I kind of started in, you know, in the film business. I moved out to LA and went to the American Film Institute, which is a grad school for filmmaking. And I ended up producing my first feature when I was 25 years old. It was like a $100,000 feature. But being in LA, you know, it's very hard actually to be successful. It's incredibly hard. It's a whole different culture, you know, as opposed to New York, where people are a lot. I know people think that this isn't true because they think New Yorkers aren't nice, but actually, in New York, people are way more open to creative people. They're like much more welcoming and interested in meeting other creatives to like work with them. And in LA, it's the total opposite. Everybody's afraid of somebody like taking their job. So like, you're kind of, people don't necessarily want to like bring in some kid that like is, you know, has some talent, you know, they kind of try to steer clear of that. So,
interesting.
It was very hard in the beginning to work and, you know, doing $100,000 feature, as you can imagine, doesn't pay very much money. So, I was doing these like little, you know, I was doing production jobs. I started as a, you know, PA, like everybody. I did craft service, and then I eventually became an electric, which is lighting, you know, for movies. But I just wasn't making any money. And I started working in the studios. I started working at New Line Cinema, and then I started working at Warner Brothers. You know, even though those jobs were paying decent, even back then, it wasn't enough, you know. And I've been an artist my whole life, and all of a sudden I'm behind a desk, and I was like, this is just not who I am. I've got to get back to being an artist. And I was at Warner Brothers and I was very depressed about being there and the job that I was doing. So I started shooting. I basically started just saying to any friend, anyone that I, you know, saw or knew that I would shoot anything. I was still working at Warner Brothers, but I was like, I just got to get back to shooting. So I started, you know, within a few weeks of just being open and just saying to people, I will shoot, you know, anything, I started getting jobs. And The one thing I'll say about that is I was already shooting all the time for myself anyway, right? Like, this isn't actually something I've had done a lot of interviews and articles and stuff, but this is, I've never really mentioned this. And I think this is actually important for this particular podcast, because when I say that I started telling people that I would shoot, it wasn't that I was like just going to my job and never shooting any pictures and then just started saying like, hey, I'll shoot stuff, right? I actually had kind of made myself professional just by doing my own work. It was art. It was more like fine art photography, but I was shooting constantly. And back then, of course, it wasn't digital, it was film, but I would get my film developed all the time. Actually, at New Line, when I worked at New Line, I worked on the same floor as the photo department, and I could shoot my photography and bring the rolls in to work and they'd get it developed and they would just deliver it back to my desk. Wow. So it was amazing. I was shooting all the time, shooting tons of stuff. And then I organized myself like as a professional. I like, you know, had these three ring binders and I like put all my images, you know, all my negatives were very neatly organized and, you know, labeled and everything. So, and I was, you know, using labs and renting equipment, you know, from rental houses, doing my own work. So I'd already been doing the stuff that, like, if you were getting hired to do things, you would know what to do. Like, I knew the rental houses, I knew the photo, you know, labs and things like that. So I was well versed in what was going on business wise in, you know, if I was going to be doing it professionally, I knew what to do. So I started telling people I would shoot things, and it just started happening. And it wasn't celebrity. It was like, you know, I worked with like an interior designer and was shooting all the interior designs that, you know, they had done. And I worked with like a furniture manufacturer. I worked with a guy that was starting, this was way back before the internet was anything, but I worked with a guy that was trying to do a website for selling makeup online, and I was shooting products. And so I just started doing it, a bunch of stuff. So I was at Warner Brothers and I was doing this kind of on the side. And then again, this was early internet. It was like 1998. There weren't like, there was Yahoo Jobs, but it wasn't like some massive thing. Like people would, you know, post jobs on, you know, the internet. It was still like very early on. People weren't even using it barely, let alone posting jobs on it. But one day I was sitting in the office and I was just like, you know, looking at Yahoo Jobs. And I used to do this when I was a little kid. I would just like take the classifieds and just like look in the paper to see if there was jobs available. And of course, there's never a job for photographer, obviously. Like that's never advertised. But by bizarre chance, this is the weirdest thing ever, someone had advertised for an event photographer to shoot events, celebrity events in Hollywood. And I was like, this has got to be like a joke. This can't be real. But I printed out the ad and like kept it on my desk for a couple days. You know, eventually, like 2-3 days go by and sitting on my desk. And eventually I'm like, you know what? I should just call it. Like, who knows? You know what I mean? Like, exactly. I'm like saying it's not true, but like I haven't called, so I don't know. So I pick up the phone and I call. And the guy says to me, it's like, oh, my God, it's so great that you called. We have a premiere tonight. Oh. It's the Bullworth premiere with, you know, with Warren Beatty. And our normal guy moved to Santa Barbara and he can't do it. And, you know, would you do it? And I said, well, what equipment do I need? And he's like, well, you need a flash, you need a battery pack, and you need a zoom lens. And so I had a really good Canon camera at the time. It was a decent camera. It wasn't like the best, but it was a lower end pro model. So I said, okay, well, let me call the rental house and see if I can get what I need. Because as like, you know, doing fine art stuff, one, I never used a flash, and two, I didn't have a zoom lens. I always used prime lenses, you know? So I was like, okay, well, let me just call the rental house real quick and see if I can get the stuff. So I called them, and of course, you know, I could get it, no problem. And I never even heard of a flash pack for a flash, because like that's, you know, to power your flash to do multiple flashes, like, you know, instantaneously, basically. So I knew about strobes, you know, for strobe lighting, you know, in studio, but I never heard of a pack to generate more power for a, you know, on camera flash. So anyway, so I call, I get the stuff, and I call the guy back and I said, I can do it. But of course, like all these premieres start, you got to be there by like 5 o'clock, even if they start at like 6 or 7 or whatever, because you got to get your spot, you know, on the carpet and all this stuff. And my job ended at like, you know, 6:30 or something. Ooh. So I basically had to like sneak out of work early. And my girlfriend at the time, I had to get her to go pick up the rental gear because I wouldn't have the time to go do that. So she goes and picks it up, and you know, I get the stuff, and it's the flash and the battery pack, and then I open up the little case for the lens, and it's a Nikon zoom lens, and I have a Canon.
Oh dear.
So she had brought my camera with the 50 millimeter lens on it. So I was like, well, I guess I've just got to shoot it with the 50, which I knew was going to be, you know, problematic.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they wanted full length pictures, which is also weird for a photographer. Like, I never shot a full length photo of a person in my entire life. But I knew, you know, that's what he asked. You know, I said, well, what do you need? And he told me the pictures that he wanted. So I shoot the pictures. And at the time, again, it was still slide film. It wasn't digital. And I took the film to the lab, and it's like 2 hours to develop. And then I go to the guy's house and drop off the images. And, you know, he's starting to scan them in, because at that time, you know, you would shoot on film, but you'd scan the images in so you could send them out to, you know, places that night, you know, to magazines or whatever. So he's looking at the pictures, and he's like, oh, you did, you know, these look good. And I was like, yeah, I'm sorry. Like, you know, I got this zoom lens, but my, you know, girlfriend picked it up, and it was a Nikon instead of a Canon. So I had to shoot with the 50 millimeter. And he stops looking at the images, the slides, and he looks up at me and he goes, you shot these on a 50 millimeter? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, you're hired. Now, that makes it sound like I was like really great, but actually I was totally terrible, because, you know, it's a craft. Like, shooting red carpet photography is a craft. It's not an art, right? Like, it's not about being an artist. You know, anyone can learn it. It just takes a lot of time to do it. And it's not easy. It's not easy in the sense that, like, when I say anyone can learn it, it's not because it's easy. It just takes a lot of time and practice to do it, because there is something to doing it, right? So, but it's more like a craft, because once you kind of understand what you're doing, like, you can be taught it, right? It's not like fine art where, you know, you can't teach somebody how to have an eye. You know, you can teach somebody to shoot a full length picture on a red carpet. So anyway, I was terrible, and the guy kept giving me a bunch of jobs just so I could like learn how to do it. Like, I would come back and he'd be like, oh, you cut the foot off here. You can't cut off the feet. Oh, you know, there's not enough headroom here, or there's too much headroom, or blah, blah, blah. You know, like, cause you do full lengths and headshots. That's like the main things, you know, with the thing you do on red carpet. So, and then eventually I met Steve Granitz, who is essentially the best red carpet photographer in the world ever. He and I eventually started Wireimage together, but I met Steve, and he became kind of like my mentor, you know, for red carpet stuff. So he then picked up the mantle of like telling me how horrible I was every day. You go like, dude, why'd you do this? They're not looking at you, and you cut the foot off. You can't cut the foot off. And like, why are you not? You know, he would just like go at me like all the time. And the lab was like around the corner from his house. So we would like go to the events, like drop off the film for 2 hours, you know, it would take 2 hours. So we'd hang out for 2 hours, grab the film, and then go back to his house. And like, I would scan. We would set up this whole thing where we had the old Nikon scanners that 35 millimeter scanners that had like stack loaders. So we could like do 50 at a time. And we would never let it stop. Like, we wouldn't even do 50. We would just like keep loading it as it was going, you know? So we'd do like, you know, like 100, 200 in a night, you know, if it was a big event or something. And I would help him, you know, and I would do some of mine, do some of his, and, you know, we did a ton of work together. And then over time, as we were working together, we started talking about, you know, I was kind of hand building websites at the time. And he, you know, asked me if I could build him a website. So as we were doing that stuff, we started talking like, hey, like, maybe we could do our own agency and all this stuff. I met that in 2000. So about 2 years into shooting, you know, events and stuff. In 2000, I went to the Cannes Film Festival. I started getting jobs. Like, I started actually being successful in the business. Like, you know, at first I was terrible, but then I learned how to do, you know, red carpet photography. And then, so what most people would do when they would do this, you have an agency, a photo agency that you would, you know, you're not hired, you're a freelancer. You just go and shoot these events, and then you send the images to your agency, and they go out and sell the pictures, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, 50-50 split. So that's what most people did. They didn't get hired by the companies that, you know, through these parties or premieres, they just went and stood on the line at the red carpet, shot their pictures and went home, right? Mm-hmm. No responsibility except to themselves. So I always was different than that. Like I always thought like, hey, I want to get hired by these people. Like I want to be the hired person. Like I want to be the official guy. You know, it's better access and you're getting paid to be there. And also you get to sell your images at the same time and they're better images, right? So most people, when they would get credentialed, would just call the company and say, you know, hi, I'm such and such with this agency. You know, I'm calling you a credential. And then the publicist would say, okay, fine, you're on the list. And that would be it. But I didn't do that. I would call every time I would call to get credentialed before I'd ask to be credentialed. I would say, hey, like, I'm calling about this event. Like, do you have anybody hired yet? Like, do you have a house photographer yet? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they would say, you know, already have somebody. But a lot of times they'd be like, no, actually, we don't have anybody. Like, you know, what do you charge? You know, so I was getting jobs that like were there for the taking, that these people just, you know, that had been doing this for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, just were leaving on the table because they didn't care. Like they didn't want to do that stuff necessarily, mm-hmm. but no one was doing it. You know, they weren't calling. I mean, there were people in the business, of course, that were their business was to be house photographers. And generally people would be calling them anyway, you know, already to schedule them to shoot. But there were plenty of events that were open that people weren't, you know, hadn't been hired for. So I started doing that. And eventually we met, me and Steve met Laura Schriftman, who has a PR agency, Harrison Schriftman. She had a kind of an agency, a publicity agency in New York, and she had kind of just started her LA presence. And I met her at the Independent Spirit Awards. She was working with Motorola. And after that, they liked me, you know, they liked me working with me. And so they said, like, you know, Laura, like, kind of approached me and said, look, like, I have Patrick McMullen in New York. You know, he's, you know, major photographer in New York. He has a big company and I use him for all our events in New York. And I've been looking for the last year for an LA photographer to do the same as Patrick. And, you know, I'll give you every job that we have. Right.
Wow.
She's like, if you're good, well, I'll give you everything that we have. So I started, she did have like a couple days of events in a row. And she's like, I've got these events and I want you to do all of them. And if it works out, then from that point on, like, you'll do everything. So the first thing she ever had me do was Rachel Hunter's birthday party at Rod Stewart's house. and it was really funny. So I, you know, I did that. And she says to me that night, she's like, look, I don't want you to be a photographer at the party. I want you to be a guest of the party with a camera. And I was like, well, that's great that you said that, because that's the way I feel. Like, that's what I want to be. Like, I don't want to be like just like some photographer. Like, I want to be a guy that people know and, mm-hmm. you know, can feel good about being around. And you know what I mean? Obviously, no one knew me yet. It was my first night. But it was the philosophy that I believed in, too. So it was pretty cool that she had said that, you know. Mm-hmm. And right before I start shooting, I think to myself, like, how do I do this? Like, how do I approach shooting this? Because if I was a person at a party and some guy came up to me, I'd be like totally annoyed, you know, right. about getting my picture taken. Like, I just think it'd be like annoying. And I'd been shooting already, by the way, you know, this wasn't like my first time shooting celebrity. It just was my first time like in like a party like that, like a private party like that. You know, I'd already been hired for jobs, other jobs too, but it was like to do something like this, I knew it was a big deal. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So I thought to myself, like, how do I approach this? And I thought, you know what, like, if I just, you know, it's the kindergarten phrase, like, treat people the way you want to be treated. And I was like, you know what, if I just treat people the way I want to be treated, I'll be fine. Like, you know what I mean? Because yes. if I feel like I would be annoyed, like, that's a good gauge of, like, you know, what would make me feel comfortable? Because I put myself in the same position as them, you know, like, as a person being bothered by a photographer. So I thought, you know, what can I do to make it, you know? And I just thought, you know, if I treat people the way I want to be treated, I'll be fine. And that was it. And then literally from that point on, she like hired me for everything.
And I just want to pause right there.
Yeah.
Because there were a lot of good things that you just said and all that. And I want to make sure that our listeners don't miss any of it. And just to touch on the philosophy of treating people the way you want to be treated, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that is so, so important. And it's true for event photography. It's true for portrait photography, for family photography, for wedding photography. If you're not putting your client at ease, then good luck trying to get a decent photo. And I've even talked to people where they're telling me about photographers that they've had a friend had a wedding and the photographer took what I thought were wonderful photos. But you talked to her and apparently the photographer was unpleasant to deal with. And that just totally just dirtied up the whole, her whole, how she saw the experience. It was a very negative experience for my friend because the photographer was unpleasant. And you're right. You do have to put yourself in your client's shoes, and it's easy to get wrapped up in ourselves because we are we're artists, and it's easy to have the blinders on. But when you're especially trying to make money and run a business, then you certainly have to consider your client. Also, Jeff, I'm noticing a common theme here about you taking, not being afraid to take the opportunity or the risk, or when you answered the classified ad and from there, I mean, a lot of people would have probably taken either not even put out a call or not even tried to apply to that job at all in the first place. Or so many people are handed an opportunity and they don't take it. And it's clear to me that you've had to work very, very hard to get to where you are. And then the other thing I did want to make sure I jotted down in my notes to highlight is the importance of honing your skills, and how you mentioned that you had constantly been taking and making great photographs as it was, and practicing your craft is so important. I think in the age of digital, it can be easy to rely on the camera and to rely on software to fix your mistakes afterwards. But there's nothing like knowing your camera and your craft inside and out. So these are all just great lessons I wanted to make sure that our audience did not miss.
I'll just forward even that last point that you said, because I think it's like the touchstone of my career is not just knowing your craft, but just doing it. Mm. Like, even if you're not making money, when I started doing that original, you know, photography, I just basically said to myself, as long as I have my camera in my hand, I'll be happy. I don't care what I shoot. Now, you know, that was one of the things that was kind of a major, you know, it's like an actor coming out to LA and going like, I won't do commercials, right? It's like, you can't say that. Like, you have to do whatever you can possibly do to make money doing this business, or you're not doing it, right? Like, is it better to be shooting and making money, or is it better to be like doing nothing, you know? Exactly. So that was one of the things that I just basically said to myself, because I never thought, you know, when I moved out to LA to do movies, I never thought I was going to be a photographer professionally. I just thought, you know, that's something I do and I enjoy doing it. But I'd always thought, you know, if I was going to be a photographer, it'd be a fine art photographer. So I never thought of doing any kind of commercial stuff, even though as a child, I'd always loved Life magazine and I loved the portraits that Life did. And I loved the hangout with celebrities that Life did. So that was something that interested me. You know, and I thought, you know, it'd be something I would be enjoy doing, but it wasn't something I was pursuing. I was pursuing being a filmmaker, right? Mm-hmm. And I put this thing in my mind, like, okay, you can only do one or the other. And eventually I had to say, that's ridiculous. You know, that's not one thing, because they're the same part of me. Both things are part of me. Mm-hmm. And so finally, you know, like I said, I at Warner, I was like, look, I'm an artist. I have to be an artist. So I just started doing it. And then I said, okay, like, you'll take any job you can get, because if I have a day with the camera in my hand, that's a happy day. You know, it's a good day, you know, and I'll get paid and whatever. And then I was like, you know what? It doesn't matter if I'm making any money at all. It's just about doing it every day. If you do it every day and you love it, eventually the money will come. Right. Mm-hmm. So that those kind of touchstones, you know, just saying that, like, just doing it every day and don't worry about the money, because eventually it'll come. Right. That, I think, was an important part of this as well. And I do come back to that many times. Like, if I'm in a rut and I feel like I'm not like getting the jobs I want, or I'm not working or something, I'll just be like, okay, go back to the roots, just start doing it again, just do it every day. And eventually it'll come back around, you know? So I think those points are like really, really important. It's like the, you know, and as you said, you know, working very hard, like that's part of it. It's like working hard. This is not a business that is, you know, going to be handed to you. And it's become even harder in the current landscape. I mean, we haven't even gotten to like where the business is right now, but, you know, things have changed so dramatically that, you know, if you wanted to go into the event business today, it would be pretty tough. It's not a great job. It's pretty tough. I mean, I wouldn't say it's not a great job. I mean, it's fun, but there's no money in it anymore, right? Like, it's very hard to find any real money in this business anymore. The sales have all dried up. Like, it's totally changed. You know, it's 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. When I started, it was like the floodgates were open. It was unbelievable. But now it's just totally changed. So it's, you know, that's the other part of working hard, is like realizing that like things aren't going to stay the same. Like, things evolve in this business like every few years, and you right. have to like be very aware of that and kind of be able to roll with the punches and change, you know.
And there are a lot of people, you know, that's an excellent point, Jeff, yeah. because there have been people who did not want to change. For example, I was talking to my friend Skip Cohen, and he said there were people who, there was an outcry when we went from black and white to color.
Right,
photography,
right.
And then when digital right. rolled around, right? And right, it's right. like you have people who, if you don't change, then good luck.
Yeah. Well, you know? Now it's video. I mean, now that right. changes video. And frankly, like, to me, if you're a photographer, if you want to be a photographer today as a commercial professional photographer, you essentially need to do video. If you don't, you're not going to make it. Like, if you start today, I mean, maybe if you're still in the business today, maybe you can continue to make it, but that's even suspect. But if you start, if you're literally starting your career today and you're like, I just want to be a photographer, mm-hmm. you probably should hang it up because, because it's not everybody that I talk to that wants to do commercial stuff or, you know, anything. It's all video. And frankly, it means video and photography, mm-hmm. but usually it's with an emphasis on the video, and, you know, they also want you to do the still sort of thing.
And this is specifically for commercial photography.
I mean, it's just, yeah, of course. Yeah. For commercial photography. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, but look, when you're doing anything with celebrity, it's the same. I mean, that's commercial too, but if just using celebrity as a specific example, it's the same. Like, you don't do a shoot ever without behind the scenes mm-hmm. anymore. Like, you just don't. And we've been doing it every time I do celebrity stuff. I even shoot behind the scenes on my own, even if they don't say they want it. Like, we always shoot behind the scenes every single time. There's always video on every shoot. You just have to do it, you know, pretty much. So video is a major, major part of it. And that's pretty much where I've transitioned. I do a lot more video today, you know, video for brands, than I do photography.
Let's fast forward to today. What does your business look like right now?
Well, just to wrap up what I was saying about earlier, just so I can kind of close the story of my beginning. So after I, you know, started doing all those jobs, eventually Steve and I started Wire Image in January of 2001. And so that kind of, like, from January 2001, then we sold the company to Getty in 2007. And so that, and then I had worked for Getty for 10 more years after that until 2017.
Just to add in there now, Wire Image, that was considered one of the largest entertainment photo agencies in the world, right?
Yeah. And it was the only agency that was competing with Getty in any, there wasn't really any competition for Getty in any other forum except entertainment imagery, because essentially they were the biggest agency for everything else. But we basically were beating them in entertainment. So eventually so cool. they had to buy us because they couldn't beat us. And and then we stayed, then I stayed with the company for 10 more years till 2017, and then I left. But even before I left in 2017, for, you know, 3-4 years before I left, I started probably like 2014, I would say, I really started with video in earnest, like doing it consistently. So for the last 5-6 years, I've been doing, you know, I've transitioned quite a, you know, mainly to video. So that kind of brings us up to now. But so wait, what were you saying? What was the question again? Sorry.
Oh, just,
what's my business now?
What does your business look like now? And I know it's constantly yeah. changing and evolving, but at this moment in time.
Well, one of the reasons I left Getty was I just directed a feature around that time in May of 2016, from May all the way through the beginning of 2017. I was in production of a movie called Paris Song, starring Abbie Cornish. So it's playing in festivals now. Hmm. But all of 2017, I was in post-production editing that film.
Wow.
And, you know, I was doing some work while I was editing. I did a couple commercial, like ad campaign type things, but essentially my work now consists of doing brand videos for brands, mm-hmm. still doing celebrity portraiture, you know, ad campaigns, you know, as well, But I'm not doing events. And when I say I started transitioning in 2014 to video, I also was really cutting back on events by that time as well. And was only doing the very biggest events, like the Oscars and the Vanity Fair Oscar party and, you know, Golden Globes and like major, major things. Or if it was like for a client that was like a major client that I'd worked for a lot. But I was probably doing like, you know, 10 or 15 events a year at that point.
Okay.
And so when I left Getty, I barely was doing events anyway. And, you know, after directing a film, I was like, okay, this is it. You know, this is time to leave my business. And then I have a studio. I have a studio here in Los Angeles that we're currently turning into a rental rental studio business. So that should be
that's neat.
Up and running in a few months. Yeah, that's really cool. I'm excited for that. And then I also am one of the owners of a hair and makeup agency called Forward Artists. And we represent hair, makeup, and stylists here in LA, some of the biggest. And we actually have a New York, we just opened a New York office as well. So we represent some of the biggest names in hair, makeup, and styling in the business. So that's kind of like a complementary business because I obviously use hair, makeup, and styling people on my shoots all the time. So, So that's, and, you know, and that's the kind of thing as well, like as a, you know, an entrepreneur, you know, also as a photographer, like that's the thing about this business is like, or, you know, any creative business, things can change rapidly and, you know, you never know what's going to happen. So having other businesses or other things that are revenue streams, you know, like if you're successful as a photographer, then you should be looking at like, okay, how can I like invest my money in other revenue streams just in case, you know, something happens in the business, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, because, you know, having that one revenue stream, you just never know, you know,
like
it's something.
Stock photographers back when stock was big. Yeah. I've talked to, and there's still some that are making income at it, but I mean, it's not nearly what it was decades ago.
Exactly. And so to me, the same feeling I had when we started WireImage, which was like, there's just so much business out in the world and it's just, all we have to do is go out and take it. That has dried up in the celebrity event business. But in the video business, I feel the same way, actually in a bigger sense than I ever did even with WireImage, because the video world is massive. Like every company in the world needs it. It's not event based. It's like, you know what I mean? It's marketing and advertising based. So we're talking about way more money. You know, I can go do a video job. Let's say it's 4 hours during the day, not at night. You know what I mean? I don't have to be out until all hours of the night shooting an event, which is like really annoying scheduling wise.
True.
But like I can go for 4 hours during the day and shoot an interview with someone and B-roll, let's say, of like, you know, a business or, you know, if it's an artist or something or whatever, you know, like whoever it is, you know, an interview and B-roll and in 4 hours and, you know, make, you know, five times the amount I would make doing a 4 hour event at night for, you know, event photography. Mm-hmm. So it's like, not only is it more convenient and it's more fulfilling and it's just like, it just pays a lot more, you know, as well. So,
so
I just think the business is like much, much brighter in the video arena than it is in the photo arena.
Video is definitely an opportunity these days. And, you know, so I'm curious then, as you got your business up and running, what did you struggle with and how did you overcome that?
When we started, well, in the beginning, and this is not a struggle that people will go through again, but in the beginning, it was what you were talking about, the idea that magazines weren't ready to use digital yet. This 2001 is when we started WireImage. The first digital camera that was inexpensive enough for like regular people to purchase was the, you know, Nikon D1, and it was $5,000. Previous to that, the Kodak, Canon, you know, hybrid was like, I don't know, $20,000 or whatever it was, you know? So, and it, you know, and the images, it was just a much harder camera to use and all this stuff. I mean, the Nikon, you know, changed everything. And that came out in 2000. So what we'd been doing is, you know, shooting and scanning images. So people were not really interested in digital yet. Again, it was only 2 megapixel also at the time. So like in the beginning of the company, you know, Vogue would be like, we're never using digital ever. Like they said that to us basically. And I was like, yeah, sure. Right. And then like, you know, 8 months into the company, all of a sudden Vogue discovered us. Right.
Oh,
like
come on,
all of a
really?
Sudden they're like, oh my God, you're the best thing ever. It's so easy. We're going to use you for everything. Like,
love it.
You know, it was hysterical. We were all laughing. So what my saying used to be, when we started the company, it was never if someone would use us, it was when. I was always like, it's not if, it's when. So every company, you know, eventually turned around. I mean, within 10 months, we were like the biggest agency in the business. I mean, we were like getting like something like 50% of the market share. I mean, it was crazy. Like, and what I mean by that is, if you took every magazine like on the newsstand and counted, which we did, this is why I know this, and counted every picture in every magazine and then looked at every credit, like tallied each agency's credits in those magazines, we were accounting for, at some points, upward of 50% of those credits.
That's crazy.
It was unbelievable. I mean, it fluctuated and over time it fell, you know, but not meaning our, you know, our income rose because it was like across many, even more publications. But, you know, it was in that, it was anywhere between 25 and like 50%. It was pretty unbelievable. And their closest competitors were not really even close. You know what I mean? It was like maybe someone came in at 10%. I mean, I'd have to look at the old documents to look at it, but some like major players like AP were at like 1%, you know?
My goodness.
So you're like, oh my God, like AP's at 1%, you know, because their business isn't selling images to magazines, you know? It was something else, you know? But the point is that we were just doing incredibly well. So, I mean, the first hurdle was this idea of, you know, digital. I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, it's hard to say. And I know this is like, because I would say that the problems we had were before WireImage, you know, rather than once we started. Because once we started it, it just kind of took off like wildfire. But I don't know. I mean, you know, initially, like finding, you know, we were lucky to find the right partners, you know, to join together with us.
Even when you were taking any job. So before WireImage,
well, I'll tell you the first photo gig to get started. I mean, I'll tell you, here's a difficulty that everyone faces. Okay. This is always a difficulty, you know, even after you've done it 100 times. So generally in the event business, publicists hire you, you arrive at the event, they go, "Hey, how's it going?" And then they leave. they don't tell you what to do. They don't tell you what to shoot. They don't tell you what they want. You know, they just like, you arrive and they expect you to just do your thing. Right. And so it continues to this day. I continue to hear guys. I mean, I was having lunch with a guy that's still, you know, working for Getty the other day. And he was saying, like, it's still a thing. And I was like, but that's the way it always is. Like, they don't tell you anything. So people, you know, just in general, like a new photographer, just getting used to the idea that, like, you are the expert, you're the professional. And you can't expect to be directed by people, you know, that you need to be the one. There's a couple things around that, right? So first, certainly when you arrive at an event, like, you need to be the one that knows what they're doing and go and does it. Of course, you want to try to ask the client what they want, but a lot of times they're not going to even tell you. So you just have to know enough to know what you need to do. But going prior to that, I used to tell our assignment people all the time, I literally, from the first assignment person I ever hired for WireImage, I said to her, her name is Andrea Collins, and she's like an amazing, you know, she's pretty much the most incredible assignment person in the business at this point, because she's been doing it for like, you know, almost 20 years. But, and she basically helped build our, you know, assignment business. But I said to her when I first hired her, I was like, okay, whatever happens, it's our fault. If the publicist doesn't give us the time to arrive, it's our fault. If the publicist doesn't give us, you know, the tip sheet, it's our fault. Like, if they don't tell us what to shoot and we don't shoot it, it's our fault. Like, nothing that they do is their fault, because they're not going to see it as their fault. Literally, if they don't even tell, if they call us like a month in advance and say, arrive at, you know, come to this event on April 27th, and then they never call back and we don't show up and we don't shoot it and we don't do everything, it's our fault. You know what I mean? We had to resort to like calling other people and other publicists to like find out when events are happening sometimes, when publicists wouldn't even give us the information. You know what I mean?
So you're, it's really like taking responsibility there.
And you have to, because, and so I would say running your own business, like if you were a photographer on your own and just starting doing this, running your own business, I would say that would be a big difficulty. It's just like understanding that, like, as the person being hired, you're like responsible for everything. And like anything that happens, even if it's not your fault, it's your fault. So you basically can't let anything go wrong because you don't want to be blamed for it. And the other thing in the entertainment business is these people have like, you know, memories like elephants. Like if you mess up like 10 years ago, that's it. Like, you know, you're never going to get hired again because they just remember that one time 10 years ago, this thing happened and you never get a call again. So you have to be really careful because, you know, you could like literally never work for a client again just because of one dumb little thing that wasn't your fault that they blame you for.
And, you know, this is a very enlightening peek into this world. And I love the lessons that you're mentioning because they can absolutely apply to everyone listening. And certain aspects of the lessons especially. I mean, just being responsible for everything and not making excuses. That's what I'm hearing. You're saying you don't make any excuses. And that's huge because I feel like we're all tempted to make excuses. I know I am. And even just doing headshots for business owners in the local area, you know, if something goes wrong, the first thing you want to do, or I've been tempted, I haven't had much go wrong, but like even just little things. You know, I'm like, oh, well, the client didn't tell me they wanted such and such and so. You know, that is worth nothing after the fact.
Yeah.
If I mean, didn't get a particular shot.
That thing that you just said, the thing of like not getting a shot. Oh, it's the worst feeling in the world where you're like, okay, like for instance, let's say there's a sponsor at an event and you have to take pictures of like the vodka sitting on the bar, right?
Yeah.
Right? But you go to an event and it's for a client and you know, you don't think anything of the sponsor on the bar because they're not necessarily related to the person thing. And you're thinking like, oh, whatever. Or like you're doing it for a charity event or something. And maybe you're doing it for free. And you're like, oh, you know, I'm not going to shoot the thing because it's not important.
Mm-hmm.
Then they call you up. Oh, did you get pictures of the bar?
Exactly.
And you're like, oh, you're like, I knew I should have done it, but I just didn't do it because I thought, who cares?
Right.
And then you're like, shoot yourself in the foot. Right. It's like, there's a certain set of images that you do every time. You just do it. Like you don't think twice about it because you need to be thinking a step ahead of your client at all times. Because if you're not thinking ahead, step ahead, and you don't do something that you know you should be doing, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Then you're like totally screwed. Now, if it's something else like, you know, oh, did you get this particular person and they're not listed anywhere and they're not this, you know nothing of nothing. Then okay, then you're like, well, sorry, you know, I didn't know this person. But if it's something you know you should have done, even though nobody told you to do it, then that sinking feeling is like, oh, why didn't I do that? And then you feel like an idiot, you know?
You do.
Because it's like, and it's not your fault, but it really is your fault. You know what I mean? You know it's your fault because you know you should have done it and you thought about it. They don't know that maybe, and they didn't tell you, so you kind of can get away with it, but that's still your fault. And so you got to be very proactive with that kind of thing. And that's like the worst feeling in the world of like having been in an event and not taking a picture.
I love how real you're being right now, Jeff.
Well, you know what it is. Truth. It's like the most valuable picture a client wants is the one you didn't take. Right?
It's true. We have a decent amount of wedding photographers listening. And so even for our wedding photographers out there, obviously weddings are not, it's not the same as like a red carpet event, but it is an event. And
well, it's huge though. I think it's harder. I think it's way harder.
Usually it's a one-time thing with that particular couple combination anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, with weddings, there's such a thing as having a shot list. Back when I did weddings, we always had a shot list, and it was so important. And even talking to other photographers who come to me, they're saying, well, I'm going to shoot my first wedding. What do I do? First of all, I'm like, should you have taken the gig in the first place?
Yeah.
I don't know what you're doing. But, you know, like the top thing I tell them is have a shot list. And they'll say, well, the couple didn't mention a shot list. They didn't tell me what I should do, just show up and take pictures. I'm like, even if they didn't say that they want a shot list, even if they don't know it, they want one.
Yeah.
And what's
because they don't know
is when
they're not professional.
Right, exactly.
They're not
after
professional.
The
I mean, that's actually even
horrible.
More, that's even more the reason a wedding photographer.
Yes.
It's even more the reason to be take everything on because you are actually the adult in the room in this same scenario, right? They do this one time. They're hiring you once.
Yep.
And they're paying a minimum of $3,000. So we're talking about a lot of money. And I know people charge way more than even $3,000, but you know, that's kind of the minimum, you know? And so if you're paying that kind of money, you expect the person, you know, to know what they're doing. You know, if you hire some guy to fix your air conditioning and it costs $3,000, you better believe that you want them to know what they're doing, right? So like if they're, you know, if they're a photographer, they should definitely know that. And, you know, of course, publicists do give a shot list as well. I'm not saying all publicists don't do that. But in general, just like you're saying, you need to be the person that knows. And look, every type of photography has its set of photographs that need to be taken, right? Like,
exactly.
And a celebrity event has a set of photographs that need to be taken. A wedding has a set of photographs that need to be taken. It's like if you miss the cake shot, you know, that's a problem. You know what
that's
I mean? You miss
huge.
The dress hanging on the, hanging, without being worn yet. That's a shot that you missed. You know, the rings shot, all the different shots that, the decor, whatever it is. If you're missing any of that stuff, you've missed something that's very important.
It's the worst feeling in the world after
yeah,
the
absolutely.
Fact when you realize it.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So I think, like, I agree with you. Like, if to make yourself professional, like what you just said, I think is a great point. It's if you're a wedding photographer or any photographer, come up with a shot list. And if you don't know, if you take a job, like you just said, that you don't actually know how to do it yet, then the first thing to do is call somebody up and try to develop a shot list. Because then at least you know what you're doing, like what you have to get done. And it gives you a sense of like, okay, what do I need to get done? And as an event photographer, and this includes weddings, it also gives you time to think about the story, right? Everything is, as a photographer, you're trying to tell a story.
Oh, that's huge.
So what is the story you're trying to tell, right? Like if I go to an event and let's say George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez are at the event, well, what is the first thing I'm thinking? Well, I need a shot of George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez together, right? That's telling the story, right? So obviously at a wedding, it's like, the husband and the wife, but then it's like the parents, on both sides. And then it's, are there sisters? Are there brothers? Are there best friends? Who's the, what is the story you're trying to tell? I mean, it's like I always, every friend of mine, I've only done a few weddings in my life. They're very difficult.
They give you gray hairs, yes.
Yeah, and I like take my hat off to any wedding photographer because it's like the most difficult thing in the world to do. And like so much stress, like crazy stress. And it's long.
Yes.
I mean, at least at a celebrity event might be 3-4 hours. I mean, event, if you do the wedding, you're like, do the, Yeah, exactly. It's insane. It's totally hard. So I really tip my hat to them. But every friend of mine is always like, oh, we don't want to do pose portraits. It's like, that's just so. And I was like, yes, you do. I mean, I never let anybody talk me out of that. Like they're all like, oh, it's just so fake and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you want it. You don't know what you're talking about. You want it. I'm going to set it up. You're going to do it. It'll be fun. You want it.
Right.
And everybody wants it. It's like, they don't get it. They're like, it's like, it doesn't work like that. Like it doesn't just like, pictures, the best pictures just don't appear. And maybe those portraits might be the only picture of a certain person that you've taken of the whole night, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I've only done it for friends because I never wanted to do weddings, but when I've done it, this circles back to what I said earlier about when I did the first event at Rachel Hunter's, house, was I always tell people when I'm doing a wedding, I'm like, oh, everybody introduced me as their friend and they're like, oh, and he's taking the pictures. Right. I don't want anybody to think, oh, here's some like wedding guy photographer that we don't know, and we don't want to, it's awkward and whatever. So if I'm a friend and I'm hanging out and I'm taking pictures, then I know the family and I'm a part of the whole thing and I can get better, I get better pictures, so that's kind of my, not better than I'm saying a great wedding photographer. I'm just saying better pictures for me. I would never classify myself as a wedding photographer.
Well, anyone who takes photos of people, so be it a celebrity photographer or a wedding photographer, you never know if that's going to be the last photo of that person ever taken either.
Well, that's true too.
You know, the very first wedding I did, which I woke up that morning with the flu. It was like a 12-hour gig. And I had an assistant. But, it was like we signed the contract 6 months prior. You just don't not show up. I mean, like, you can't call in. So, it turned out very sweet couple. Well, their son ended up unfortunately passing away. I can't remember, a handful of months after that. And
Whoa, that's crazy.
The wedding photos were some of the last photos that they'd had taken of him, all that to say, always be prepared, and not just to keep nagging clients off your back. I mean, that too, right?
Yeah.
But also because the portraits that you take, they are valuable. They're more than just an image, on a piece of paper or pixels on a screen. Like there's value.
Well, just to even circle back about what you said about keeping nagging clients off your back, think about it in the reverse way. If somebody calls you and says, hey, do you have a picture of the vodka at the bar? And you go, oh, yeah, here it is. How amazing is that? Like,
right.
That's,
Oh, that's
it's
true.
not even to keep nagging people off your back. What it is to be, it's to be a great photographer and have run a great business, because the second somebody calls and says, do you have X, Y, and Z? And you always say yes, that you're going to be getting called back. You know what I mean? You know, people call me like, oh, hey, like we deleted these images and it was like 2013 and blah, blah, blah. And I was like,
oh,
like 5 minutes later, I'm like, yeah, here they are. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not, it's, I'm like, of course I have them. No problem. Here you go. You know, like, you don't have know how many times like that stuff happens. And, you know, if you can put your finger on things immediately and be the problem solver, it's, again, it's the reverse of like trying to avoid the negative. It becomes a major positive, you know.
Totally.
It's not, you know, and that's something where you really excel, because, you know, look, we all experience people in every type facet of, you know, people doing work in the professional world where they're just not up to really doing their job properly. But when you find people that really, really do their job and are really on it, those are the people that you trust and you keep using over and over and over again. And that's how you keep clients for years and years and years. And that turns your business from being freelance, the word freelance, which is like kind of a word that you use when you're like, you know, just starting out in a business and you get like one job here and there, like, you know, and you're struggling to even book a job, to becoming a professional, which is you never think the word freelance disappears and you just become the thing. You become a photographer because people are calling you every day and you're working every day doing it and you never think twice about it. You know, there's a big time frame between just starting out and getting to that person. But if you are one of these people that is like really diligent and focused and hardworking and, you know, really stays on top of these things, and like, that's the kind of person that, you know, is going to have an easier transition from being a freelance person to you know, someone that's like the professional photographer, because, you know, you're staying on top of things and people see that, you know. I mean,
yes.
I just, as an example, like, I remember when we sold WireImage to Getty, it was, you know, huge news in Los Angeles. And I know at that point it was, what was it? It was 2008. So I'd been 10 years in the business, basically 2007, like 9 years in the business. And I knew a lot of people, and it was over Oscar weekend. So Oscar weekend, of course, is the biggest time of the year here in Los Angeles. And there's tons of events, many, many parties. So I was seeing everyone, like everyone was out, you know, and we announced it on a Thursday. So it was the whole weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, like every day I was seeing, you know, huge amounts of people, you know, because the Spirit Awards is on the Saturday, which is like the pre-Oscar type thing. And then Sunday is the Oscars, and Thursday and Friday there was big events. And everybody was coming up to me, like congratulating me, which I know sounds like you would think that's normal, that people would congratulate you. But in a way, sometimes in Hollywood, you're not sure, like when you do a big sale like that, if people are like going to be disgruntled, you know, kind of like, oh, like, why did this person get that? Or why did this happen? You know what I mean? And not really be incredible. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you're not sure like how the reaction is going to be. And the main chorus, you know, that I heard from people during that time was like, you work so hard, you deserve this.
Oh, nice.
And so what I say to that is, my job is very public. Like, that job, being an event photographer, is very public. Like, sure, you might be an agent or manager and you might really work hard, but I wouldn't see that. You know, I wouldn't know how hard you work because you work in an office, right? But everyone sees me, right? They see me working because I'm at events. You know, they see me every night doing my job. And so as a public person out and about and people seeing you, and you know, they saw that I worked really hard, and it comes across, you know, it came across. And I think that was a really cool thing to hear people say, like, you know what, you deserve this, man. Like, you work really hard. I just thought that was really cool because, again, I wasn't really sure exactly what the reaction was going to be. So it was pretty neat to like to hear that. You know, that's a nice thing to hear, because it's not even like, oh, smart idea, or you did this or that. They were just like, you know what, you worked hard, you earned it. You know?
Yeah.
That is really cool. That was cool. So,
oh my goodness. Oh, you know, this is so cool. You're dropping so many lessons and golden nuggets for our listeners.
Golden nuggets.
Yeah, right. And you know, the time is really flying, and I want to make sure and ask about Photo Shelter. Like, they are sponsoring the show, and you know, it's the way that we present our work as photographers is so very important. First of all, if you're taking images, making images, taking photos, you know, the way you display them online, it'll show whether you're professional or not. And I don't care what anybody says, Facebook is not enough. Just having a Facebook page. If you want to be taken seriously, you need to have a nice portfolio, a nice website. And yours, Jeff, I mean, it's neat, it's clean, it's modern, it lays out the images very well. And I'm just curious to hear about how you got plugged in with them. What made you start using them in the first place?
Well, when we had WireImage, we had a back end of the website that regular people didn't see, right? Mm-hmm. And we had a back end for clients that we do private sites, right? Which PhotoShelter does. But we did private sites that, you know, we would upload the images and we'd be able to send a link to a client and they could see the images privately. Well, when we sold to Getty, over some time, that stuff was going to start being phased out, like the kind of back end stuff was mm-hmm. going to start. It wasn't phased out when I started working with PhotoShelter, but it was kind of like getting to the point where it was like not as easy to do it. And I just thought, you know what, let me look for another solution for my own stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Not for stuff that I did for Getty, but just for my own stuff. And so I started looking around at the time. I've been a member of PhotoShelter for a really long time. I mean, it's probably been 10 years.
Wow.
I mean, I'm pretty sure it's been 10 years. I mean, I don't even know how long PhotoShelter's been around, but I've been with PhotoShelter for probably 10, I would imagine. Anyway, mm-hmm. so I started looking around at the time of like what was available. I think there was like Zenfolio and there's like a couple. Yeah, there's a couple other ones. So I did a lot of research because I was like, what is the price? What is the layout? There's certain things about, you know, all of these things as a creative, you know, that are important, mm-hmm. right? So I was looking at like, what's the layout of the site? How much does it cost? Does it do the functions that I need it to do? Mm-hmm. You know? Yep. So I looked at all those things and I thought, wow, like this is a good, and the price I feel like is, you know, reasonable. So I tried it out and I thought, okay, this is cool. And so this is before the websites even existed on mm-hmm. PhotoShelter, mm-hmm. right? And so I was using it for a number of years without the website, you know, on PhotoShelter. And then eventually they came out with it. And I was like, oh, this is so great. Like, I don't have to like build a separate website, and to have the back end power it.
Yeah.
Is awesome because it's the easiest thing in the world to be able to just like plug a photo in and boom, like 2 seconds later, mm-hmm. it's on the site, or click on a link of, you know, a gallery that's already there and it's on your website, you know. It's totally seamless. It's similar to what we had with WireImage, where there's like a front end, like the website is mm-hmm. like the front end, and the back end is, you know, all this other stuff that you don't see under the hood. So it was fairly similar to what we had done. So I thought, this works for me, and it's just so simple, you know. And then they more recently, you know, over the past couple of years, I don't remember when, but introduced the proofing mm-hmm. page, and I think the proofing page is beautiful because it. You know, the regular page when you send a link is just kind of like smaller, you know, it looks more like, you know, like a proof sheet or something. But like, you know, people have big screens and they want to see the images bigger. So like, it's great that the proofing thing is out because now those images show up like, you know, like a beautiful website rather than just like right, little proof sheet,
really makes
you know?
An impression.
So yeah. So all of the functions have been excellent. And I've been very happy with it actually. And when we started Forward Artists, we use the PhotoShelter plugin to power all the galleries of our artists.
Very nice.
You didn't see PhotoShelter at all on the site, but we literally had a plugin where it connected to our website. So every gallery was pulling images from PhotoShelter.
No kidding.
We changed it recently, but for the first like year or two, we actually used the PhotoShelter plugin to power the images on the website. So there's other uses for PhotoShelter, not just the websites that they provide. You can actually use a plugin. And then the other thing that I love is the integration, the tight integration with mm-hmm. Lightroom, because of the plugin to be able to choose your images and then hit export and they just appear on, you know, they export directly to PhotoShelter rather than, you know, exporting a bunch of JPEGs to your computer and then dumping them onto the site and, you mm-hmm. know, and then having to delete the JPEGs and all that stuff, which I think is like totally annoying. So that whole thing, all of those things have been really cool for me. And then they had a competition, I don't know, like a year or two ago, that was like, you know, the best of different categories of photographers on the site. And I was one of the top you know, portrait photographers on out of like 800,000 users or something like
that's
that. I think
right.
It was. It's some crazy number. Yeah, it was some crazy number. I think it was 800,000. Maybe they can correct you with that, but it was like a huge number of people. And, you know, all the users of Photo Shelter, they chose like, I don't know, 5 or 8 portrait photographers, and I was one of them. So that was cool too. That was not, you know, that was something, again, because I've been a member for so long, that was kind of unexpected to have this little cool thing. And, you know, actually even them introducing me to you as part of it as
right.
well. So like, just, I think they've actually, you know, they've started to do other things, you know, now like moving into promotion, like helping photographers mm-hmm. as well. So I think that's more recent, but that's cool too. And I think that's been a benefit. That's like a cool little side benefit that I never expected to happen.
And, you know, you definitely deserve, you earn that spot of honor because I mean,
thank you.
Just, yeah, your work is stunning. And, you know, one thing I do like to ask, because so many photographers, especially ones who don't have a website, who some have an old website on a platform that's clunky, you know, they think it's this big, huge, scary task to put together a website for their work. And so I'm curious for you, how long did it take you to get just the initial version of the website portion up and running?
Well, for Photo Shelter, it was mm-hmm. really easy because I had plenty of other websites prior to Photo Shelter that had been custom made and that kind of, you know, I spent a lot of money making like custom made right. websites and things like that. So I already had a website for many, many years. You know, like I said, I started years ago, like, you know, hand building them myself, you know, back in the late 90s. So I'd always had a website. So it wasn't hard for me at all. It was actually the easiest mm-hmm. one I've ever done because, again, like it was just, you just upload all the ones you want into a gallery and in 5 seconds you can have. I mean, I literally, if somebody came to me tomorrow and said, here's 500 images, you know, I want to build a website, you would literally, with Photo Shelter, would take you all the time it would take you would be just choose mm-hmm. the pictures, because building it is like the easy part because of the templates on Photo Shelter. It takes like no time at all. But I mean, just forgetting the Photo Shelter part of it, just to talk about photographers mm-hmm. and websites a little bit. I mean, look, now is not the time in the world that it's hard to make a website.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like the easiest
sure
thing
is.
In the world to do. I mean, besides Photo Shelter, which I think is like probably the simplest way to do it because of being able to upload and manage your images, you know, through the back end. But there's, you know, Squarespace and, you know, I was always building up until recently. Again, I've been building my own websites mm-hmm. on WordPress, you know, besides photo websites, you know, other things on WordPress. But Squarespace has gotten so unbelievable now and so easy and so cheap that it's almost pointless to mm-hmm. even do that mm-hmm. anymore because it's just so simple. You know, so why I'm saying that is anyone that's trying to do a creative business at this point, if you don't have a website, there's a right. major problem. Like you cannot. Every single person in the creative industry has a website. So if you want to be a creative and you don't have one, you can't be one. Like it's not going to happen. So if you have anything to show, like even if it's, you know, 20 images, I know that sounds, you know, you're probably not going to get hired from that. You know, it's very small amount of images, but
it's
you got to have something.
Yeah.
You got to have something to show people, right? You got to start somewhere. It just is what it is. You know, you at this point in time, you know, you have to have that. I mean, you know, you have to have an Instagram. You know, I have my own love-hate relationship with Instagram, but like, you know, obviously you have to have Instagram. You have to be, you know, I mean, you can be on other social networks, but as a photographer, a videographer, obviously Instagram is the place to be. So that's an important part of like being, you know, self-promotion.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I've talked to people, you know, that are like, oh, I do this and that. And like, I'm like, well, send me a link to your site. And like, I don't have one yet. I'm like,
right.
What? Like,
it almost doesn't even compute.
Not
yeah.
possible.
Like, you have no excuse.
Right. I mean, it's just not. I mean, that's the thing that I would say, you know, you were talking about difficulties mm-hmm. earlier. The one thing I'll say that has changed from when I started is there's a level of difficulty that has disappeared. And that's called money. It doesn't cost money anymore. Like, yes, it costs money to buy a digital camera, but there's so many digital cameras out in the world now and used cameras. You can get, you know, a 5D
right.
for
right.
like nothing. You know what I mean? Hell, the Panasonic GH4, the new one is $600 and it's a 4K video mm-hmm. camera. You know what I mean? So like at this point, money is no longer an issue. So when I started shooting, I left that agency I was talking about that I answered the ad for, and I went to another one. But the thing about the first agency, they were paying for my film and developing, right? If they hadn't paid for my film and developing, I would never have been able to do this business because it would have cost so much money. I never would have been able to start, right?
Yeah.
So luckily, this my deal with these guys was they would pay for my film and developing. I left them to go to another company, and they had agreed to that same deal. But after a few months, something happened, and that relationship ended. And so all of a sudden, I didn't have anybody to pay for my film and processing. And I was like, what am I going to do? You know, how am I going to do this? You can't be on a job thinking about how many rolls of film you're shooting. Like, you got to shoot the job, you know? So luckily, Steve stepped in and we made an arrangement, and he was doing, you know, he helped me out and did it for me for a time until I could, you know, do it on my own. But what I'm saying is I was able to, you know, cobble together this thing and able to start back then with being, you know, paid for my film processing, but that doesn't even exist anymore. And so they're really kind of the no excuses thing that you said, and this is why I'm bringing this up. There's no excuses for a website. Well, there's no excuses to be doing it either, right? Because now you don't even need to process anything. There's no money involved. Like, you buy your camera, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, if you buy a camera or get somebody to give it to you or borrow one, or you have one at school or whatever, like, you can shoot as much as you want and it doesn't cost a cent.
That's great.
And that's a huge, you know, obstacle that we used to have that we don't have anymore. So even in college, I remember, like, you know, my dad, like, you know, I had to set up an account. I was in New York, you know, and I had to set up an account at like a lab and at a photo store to like be able to buy the, you know, film and the, you know, process the film, because like, even though I had like a small little, you know, allowance or budget or whatever he gave me for my regular stuff, if I had to use that on film and processing, I wouldn't even have been able to eat. You know what I mean? Yeah, so you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like, you know what I mean? So like, you know, and I was lucky again to have a parent that was able to cover that stuff, but that's the thing. Like, so I say, you know, and I say this about video too, like, this is a point in time in the world where, as a creative, everything has been democratized. Anyone can do this stuff. I don't mean anyone's good at it. I'm just saying, you, if you want to do it, you can do it. But if you want to do it, then you need to do it, which means you just got to do it all the time. You know, you have to carry the camera with you. You have to become a professional. You have to just act like a professional, even if you aren't, you know, getting paid yet. You know, like, organize your computer. You know, set up like how you do your folders, like, understand your workflow of like how you choose pictures. You know, if somebody was going to deliver, you know, if you needed to deliver them to somebody, how would you do that? You know, what are the local rental, you know, companies, like, just everything that you can learn, you know, about it, and start acting like a professional, and then just shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot, because that's the way you're going to become, you know, better. You know, those are the things that that's kind of would be my like main recommendation for like a person that's just starting out.
I love it. And I'm sure you're saving many people out there much headache from doing things the wrong way. And we certainly appreciate
Yeah, I try to mentor people. I mean, I've done a lot of work. We didn't touch on it at all, but I did a lot of work with the kids from Parkland over the last year. And I've mentored. So besides working with them, you know, with advocacy and gun control and all that stuff, I also have just them as people, have worked with them directly, you know, as people, and just been like, hey, you know, some of them like are into filmmaking, some are into photography. So those kids I've become mentors to. And, you know, I actually gave a camera to one of the kids. I gave an old 5D
to
one of the kids for them to have and to use and to help their career. You know, so I like to mentor people, and I've done it, you know, I did it all through WireMage, and I've done it, you know, I'm doing it now, you know, through these kids and, you know, through other people too. So I think it's important to, like, you know, help people, try to get, after doing it for a long time, I have a lot of knowledge. So I think it's important to give back.
Very important. And yeah, that's, we really appreciate it. We do. We need more people like you in the industry for sure.
Cool. Thank you.
You know, we're coming to the end of the interview, and this has been amazing. I do want to make sure and ask, is there a particular, well, I feel like you've already answered this question in advance though, but if there's anything else, a particular photography resource, tool, online course, anything that you would recommend to our photography listeners today?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say that. I wish there was like more of a place that I felt was like the place to go. You know, I don't feel like there is one. Petapixel feels like really good as a place to look. There's a couple other blogs that I'm not remembering all their names, but you know, that I look at. Yeah, it's hard to say. I feel like that's the one area where the photography business is lacking. I mean, I know there's like, you know, the ASMP and there's like, what's the major magazine, the photo magazine, forgetting all of a sudden. Anyway, when you're doing a job like this, that is essentially all freelance, it feels like there's not one place that like everyone goes, that there's like a real hub for photographers, which I find, you know, it's sad. Like there isn't something like that. And maybe there is something more like that, that I'm not aware of, but after 20 years of looking for this, I haven't found it really. But I mean, the internet has helped. I mean, sure, like all these blogs has been helpful. And I would say, actually, now that I think of it, if you want to talk about resources, I would say the best resource for photographers today is YouTube. That's the best resource. Because, yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, that's the place. Because as a photographer, and I've said this to pretty much anyone, especially all the like the kids that I've been mentoring and stuff, they'll like say to me, how do I retouch this? And I'll be like, look it up on YouTube. Like, it's like, I would look it up on YouTube. So you just look it up on YouTube. Yeah. You know, it's like, to me, that's the best resource. It's also kind of what we've been talking, it kind of ropes into all the other stuff we've been talking about. What's great about YouTube is it helps you continue to do work. Like you go out and shoot something. I'm advocating go out and shoot all the time. Well, part of shooting is, you know, in this day and age, there's no negatives, but essentially the raw file out of the camera is a negative. So you have to work on it. You can't think that the raw negative out of your camera is what any professional photographer publishes in a magazine. Right. They don't. Like it just no one does that. So you need to learn how to develop your images. So once you've taken the pictures, then I would like go on YouTube and whatever question you have, type it into YouTube and just start watching tutorials, because you could become like in 6 months, like better than me at Photoshop just by doing that. I mean, that's what's so nuts about it. Like, it's like a superpower. Mm-hmm. Like it really is like a superpower. It's like the Matrix. You like plug your brain into it, and all of a sudden you know how to do these crazy tricks on Photoshop that like would have taken somebody like 20 years to learn, you know? So that is the best, you know, resource for photographers. And I use it constantly. I mean, there's techniques that I've learned, you know, I mean, I've been using Photoshop for 20 years, and there's, you know, techniques that I've learned now that I use like every day that I learn on YouTube.
Absolutely. You know? And that's fantastic.
So, yeah.
Fantastic advice. Yeah. And Jeff, my final question, but definitely one of the most important, tell us where we can find you online to check out your work.
Oh, okay. It's jeffvespa.com is my photography portfolio. And then I have my like production company entity is Vespa Pictures. So vespapictures.com is like all the video stuff that you'll see. It's my kind of motion
Excellent.
Stuff.
I will make sure to include those in the show notes for sure. And Jeff, this has been just amazing. I want to thank you for just chilling and chatting with us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening to me.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I ask that you please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews we get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast in search rankings. We want to reach as many people as possible and help improve our photo industry. I appreciate you all. Thanks for listening.